This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Hey, welcome and thanks for tuning in and listening with your favorite podcast app. Carm Capriotto here, the Aftermarket Podcast Guy, with another 20 in 30 format with Frank Scandura of Frank's European. Frank Scandura brings his unique insights with 20 questions in 30 minutes, a unique format only available from the Aftermarket's Remarkable Results Radio. Frank and I had a great time doing this interview, and he shared something he tried that didn't work, and also how he's dealt with customers that make unreasonable demands, among other great topics. And before we jump into 20 questions in 30 minutes with Frank Scandura, let me thank Napa Pro Image for their continued support. Due to the current restrictions in place in Las Vegas, along with international and domestic travel constraints and the rising cases of COVID-19, Napa has made the proactive decision to reschedule the Napa Expo. Now, we remain committed to our attendees and exhibitors to provide a valuable and productive in-person experience at the proper time. Now, for now, Napa believes this is the right move for all involved, and they're going to use this time to make new plans to bring you helpful and powerful content. Now, Napa looks forward to hosting you when we can do it safely. If you ever get an idea for a show topic or to show off your shop on an AftermarketWeekly.com virtual tour, please drop me a line. Love to hear from you. Carm@RemarkableResults.biz. That's the email address. Hey, I want to thank you for telling others about the Aftermarket's premier podcast and how to get the podcast on their smartphone. You're doing your part, and I thank you in helping people listen and to help spread the good word and the insights that we provide to you each week. Find the key talking points with Frank Scandura at RemarkableResults.biz/E595. Hey, warm welcome to Frank Scandura from Frank's European, Las Vegas, Nevada.
Live and in person.
Live and in person. Hey, Frank, thank you so much for coming on and with this kind of neat new format that we put out maybe once a month, 20 questions in 30 minutes with Frank Scandura. Frankly, I can't wait.
You know, I'm kind of looking forward to this myself. It's pretty cool. Yeah, and I appreciate the opportunity to be a part of it as always.
I ask you to come on because I really want to know. And so, you know, I offer 70 questions up to my guest and they pick 20. And it's always fun to see what come up and then, of course, what answers. And so for my audience to even know more is I put these in the order I want to ask them. So this is not how Frank originally picked them. I mean, you know, yeah, you picked them in kind of whatever order. But anyway, thank you for the support over the years. We did a great shop tour a few years back during Apex Week. Of course, Apex isn't going on this year. And you've come on the show and brought such great, great wisdom in the past. So always thank you for that. You ready to jump in?
I am ready, and thank you for this kind words. I appreciate it very much.
No problem, sir. First question, if you had all the money in the world, what would you buy?
The first thing I would buy is security for my family. As I get older, I realize that as I get closer to the end of the game, that becomes more and more important. That'd be the first thing I'd buy.
So what would you do? I mean, if you had all the money, would you make sure that they were all self-sustaining, put the money away from them, or would you teach them how to use the money?
Well, that's absolutely the first thing I would do. Deborah and I spent a lot of time doing financial coaching. You've heard me talk about it before. We totally believe in the Dave Ramsey baby steps. Fortunately, three out of our four kids have taken that class. So, you know, they've got the foundation. As I learn more and more about asset protection, there's things to put in place, right? We all hear the horror stories when you just give money to people who don't know how to handle money, they're going to blow it. So we don't want that to happen. We've worked really hard for what we've acquired in our lives, and we're going to work equally as hard to try to spend it all. Should we not? Should I have had the resources to set something aside? I want to make sure they're well equipped to handle it.
Got it. Smart, smart move. Question number two, Frank, is one of my favoritest questions, just to let you know. I'm glad you picked it. Is it easy to say, I don't know?
It is. But you do have to practice.
But wasn't there a point in time when you said, I got to stop hiding behind the fact that I know everything?
Yeah, that's exactly why you need to practice saying, I don't know. And it's okay to not know everything, right? And don't just say, I don't know. Say, you know what? I'm not sure about that. Give me a few minutes to do some research and get back to you. And even if you're into political discussion or whatever it is, if you don't know for sure, do some research and find out what it is, right? If it's a philosophical, find out what it is. Don't just assume and don't argue just because you think you're right. So, yeah, I don't know. Let me find out.
Very important answer. Good answer. Let me throw my 3 cents in, even though this is the Frank Scandura show. What happened for me was I'm sitting with people and they're just popping these acronyms off like crazy. And instead of saying, I don't know, I stopped and said, what does that mean? Can you explain that to me? Let me write that down. Explain that again. And it got to be to the point where because people assumed I knew everything that they were throwing at me, I'd walk away from that conversation and I'd say, what the hell was that all about? I hope they never say, hey, Carm, you remember 3 weeks ago we were talking about that and I didn't remember a thing? Stop. Tell me. Explain. Slow down. It took me some time in my life to realize that if I didn't do that, I was going to get in trouble some other time.
You know, and I've said it, I can't remember what movie it was from, but explain it to me like I'm 5.
Right.
Help me out here. Explain it to me like I'm 5, right? Slow down. Quit using the big words. And I get a kick out of somebody, you know, they use a big word I haven't heard before. And I say, I'm going to charge you $3 to look that up.
Oh, I love it. Excellent. Hey, we got a great start going here. Question 3, do you see obstacles not as roadblocks, but as opportunities?
All the time. All the time. I'm a visionary, so I can see way past what's right in front of me. And I can almost anticipate roadblocks. And I love playing the what if game. Okay, well, if this happens, so what? What if it happens? Let's figure out how to move the next step and let's move on. I kind of like the challenge. If I don't have challenges and roadblocks to use as opportunities, I tend to get bored and get in trouble.
You remind me of the word scenario, meaning you've thought it through so often that if it does actually happen, you say, this has never happened before, but I felt I've been here.
Right, exactly right.
Great answer. Thanks. Hey, do you have a strong intuition? And if you do, do you use it?
I think I do. And I tend to act on it. You know, one of the things that's a part of my faith is wisdom. And I've prayed for wisdom a lot. And I trust that inner instinct and inner intuition. And I've also learned to trust my wife's. Because we interview together, you know, new candidates. And she says, I don't like that person. I'm done. Interview's over. We're over. We're done. We're finished. We're not going to discuss it anymore because I've learned when I go against that intuition, it never ends up good.
Does she give you a code, you know, during the interview? Do you see her?
Oh, no, she'll wait till afterwards and just tell me straight out. Yeah.
You must prove your intuition over and over again when the things you feel aren't going to be right aren't right. And the things that are going to be good are good. And you keep going back to that and saying, wow, it's almost like creating a muscle memory, trusting that intuition.
Yeah. And so my background, you know, as a technician was self-taught. I had to teach myself how to diagnose cars. And I use this example again today. There's 4 steps to accurate diagnosis. Check the basics, number one. Check the basics, number two. Check the basics, number three. And number four is refer to number one. And it never fails. When you have that gut instinct about something, it's always something basic that you could have discovered immediately had you just kept those, you know, that gut feeling in mind. And I tell my guys all the time, I said, did you feel in the pit of your stomach that wasn't going to be right? Yeah, I did, boss. How did you know? Well, that's what you need to act on. You need to act on that gut feeling.
Great advice. Number 5, your biggest learning moment.
I used to let my temper get the best of me. And my best learning moment was pointing my bony Sicilian finger down the hallway saying, I built this business. And then I realized, no, I didn't. First, I answered to somebody above. Second, I'm nothing without the people around me. So that was my biggest learning moment. I can't even remember how long ago it was, but I remember it like it was yesterday.
Was it a moment, though, that you got into trouble because your ego was so strong?
You know, I'm always pretty good at intimidating people when I walk in a room, so I can't say that, and I don't do it intentionally. I just have this, you know, God-given presence. So I wouldn't say so much in trouble, but, you know, walking around like Mr. Big stuff. How's the song? Mr. Big Shot, who do you think you are? Right? That was me. And, you know, come in and kicking a dog all the time, and Frank's in the room, and you're going to do this, and you're going to do that, and you're going to do this, and you're going to do that, and so that was my learning moment when I realized, and it gave me a dose of humility that I truly, truly needed.
Great. Thank you for sharing that very intimate story. And by the way, Mr. Big Stuff was, I'm going to tax my memory, Jeannie Knight, I believe, was the singer on that song. Yeah.
And my wife's in the background going, yep.
Hey, Carm here. And coming up, Frank shares a car count idea.
Hey, it's Carm here, talking to you about what the Napa Auto Care Center program can do for your business. Now, you probably already know the Napa brand is the most recognized and trusted name in the automotive aftermarket industry. In fact, studies show that 95% of consumers recognize Napa and associate it with quality parts, service, and technical expertise. So why not complete a Pro Image upgrade and take advantage of that? Pro Image is a co-branding program for the exterior and interior of your shop. On the outside, it includes the Napa colors and distinctive Napa signage. While the public may know you as a reliable, locally owned business, a Pro Image upgrade helps set your shop apart from the competition even further. It's also a visual signal to customers and potential customers that you and Napa are partners. Most importantly, Pro Image really works. This co-branding opportunity has helped Napa Auto Care Centers across the country increase their car counts and sales. In fact, those that have completed a Pro Image project enjoy an average 23% sales increase during the first year. Pro Image upgrades are also available for the interior of your shop. A Pro Image interior upgrade transforms your customer waiting area from merely utilitarian to warm and welcoming. The goal is to maintain your shop's independent identity while enhancing the customer's experience. You can get a free look at what a Pro Image exterior and interior upgrade could look like by visiting the Napa Auto Care member site and clicking on the Napa Pro Image link under the Napa Pro Image tab. Or contact your local Napa Auto Parts store. Your servicing Napa store can tell you more about Pro Image, plus the hundreds of other reasons to become part of the Napa Auto Care family, the largest network of independent automotive repair shops in the country.
Number six, what are you doing to put the customer first in the business?
Putting my employees first, plain and simple. And I know that if I treat them right, I give them the training and I give them the tools and I give them and I lay out the expectations clearly, right? You've been in my shop. You saw the mission statement and it's written quality, integrity, honesty in writing. It's on my website. It's in everything else that we print. That's our message. Those are our core values. So I give them the tools to treat the customers right. And it works. It works better than me stepping all over them to do something for the customer that they know how to do.
I almost think you've answered the next question, question number seven, a special strategy to build a strong reputation.
It starts at the top. We all know that. But, you know, I can't run around here saying, make sure you do the right thing for the customer. Psh, hey, let's do this over here in the back. I had a discussion with one of my teammates. His wife's going through something at work. And I said, well, does it line up with your morals, your values, and your integrity as husband and wife, what she's going through at work? He goes, no, it doesn't. And she doesn't know if she should leave. And I just looked at him and he goes, she should leave, because it doesn't line up with their values. So you have to have your core values. You have to know what you stand for and do not tolerate any less. I had an employee who falsified a credit application to get a car. He lied about how long he'd been working here and how much money he made. So I fired him on the spot. He goes, I don't understand why you're firing me. I said, if you will lie to the bank for financial gain, you're going to probably lie to my customers. And that sends a message to the entire organization.
Just a great lesson there. Frank recently fired a customer. And if you did, why?
We have customers that make unreasonable demands. Everybody makes mistakes. It's how you handle those mistakes that can set you apart from everybody else. And I just remember a customer being told he needed spark plugs and declining the spark plugs. And then a few weeks later coming in with a problem that the spark plugs would have taken care of, and then demanding that we're going to replace the spark plugs, and then we're going to pay for registration, and we're going to pay for rental, and you're going to do this, and you're going to do that. And I just very politely said, this is not the right shop for you, sir. I'm very sorry. And I walk over to the door. I open the door and I stand there. This is not the right shop for you, sir. I'm sorry.
I can see the Sicilian doing that. I can just see that.
It's funny, too, how many people will talk to me on the phone and they think I'm like 6'9" or something. I walk in a room and I'm this little 5'8" guy. You know, I'm not that tall. I'm not that big, but yeah, don't mess with me.
By the way, I'm not sure if I've shared this with anybody, but I'm half Sicilian. So, okay.
All right. Truth is, I'm half Sicilian, but that's the only part I count.
Next question. What impact is technology going to have on the business?
If you are not digitally savvy now, it might almost be too late. We've got to be in a position that we're capturing as much data as possible. You've got to be doing things by text message. You've got to be doing things, you know, with digital inspections. You've got to have digital dispatching, digital reporting. Somebody posted on one of the Facebook automotive groups, hey, can you show me examples of your whiteboards? And I went, wow, man, this is 2020 and they're still looking to do whiteboards. And so that's one side of it. And the other side's the technology of the cars. My favorite story is growing up as a kid, the mechanics at the garage, I was cleaning the floors, complaining about GM, high energy ignition, no points. And they were furious that the manufacturers are going to make it so we can't work on these cars anymore. And I looked at them and I said, wait a minute, no more points? No more adjusting the points and then the dwell is wrong and then the timing's wrong. Then I go back and I got it. And the guy goes, well, yeah. And I says, well, sign me up, because that just made my life easier. And so and with electric cars and hybrids and plug-in hybrids and be ready.
We did an 80s show, a decade show, Town Hall Academy, a few weeks ago. And one of the guys said, when fuel injection came out, we heard the same crappy story, you know, oh my God, it's just a fad. It's going to go away. But he said, when carburetors went away, and every time a carburetor car came in the shop, he said, I'm not doing this anymore.
I just told somebody that the other day. I said, it's like, you know, they knock on the Crystal Palace door over here in my office and there's a carburetor in shop saying, hey, boss, can you look at this? And I'm like, oh, there we go. Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. You have a special labor rate for those old cars, don't you?
We do. Yes, we do. Anything 1995 and older. Does it even have to be old, old, old?
Next question, Frank. What is the latest book you read? Big takeaway from it?
I'm actually on my second read of John Maxwell's Leader Shift, S-H-I-F-T, where you shift your leadership thinking ability. And the biggest takeaway is making those around you leaders, right? Shifting how you lead to help them become leaders. And as a John Maxwell coach, I find it's like, right? Duh. And it's refreshing to know that not everybody wants to do what you do, but they want to do what they do well. So give them the tools to do it.
Great answer. Thanks. How much training per year are you getting yourself?
I coach for Transformers Institute, and they have a video series, and I watch all of those videos personally to make sure that I understand their culture and what they're trying to get across to shops. And I still do training with my John Maxwell stuff. I read every day. Start with my daily devotion, a couple chapters in the Bible, and either a business magazine or a trade magazine. My hobby is woodworking, so I'm also learning different skills in woodworking.
And people were saying just the other day to me that you've got to have a hobby and it's got to be outside the business.
It's so refreshing, too, because I built a detached garage at home with 12-foot high ceilings and 6-inch thick concrete floors to put a lift in because I'm going to build a car at home. And I've had a couple cars there, and I really didn't enjoy it at all. It was a real drag. And I really enjoyed woodworking. I made a couple of gifts for my wife and some family members. That is fun. In fact, my Facebook page under hobbies, it says making sawdust. So that's my favorite thing to do, is make sawdust.
Good for you. Ever had a mentor?
Jim Murphy was a great mentor for a number of years. He was my coach during my 20 group days. Dan Taylor, you just had him on not long ago.
Sure did, last week.
Great man, great guy. I can always count on him. Greg Bunch and some others, yeah.
Share a gross margin hack.
Learning what gross margins were is probably the best hack. And not being afraid to charge for what you're worth, right? Speaking of Jim Murphy, when I was with his group, I was able to work on a spreadsheet that helps me calculate my break-even based on my gross profit. And then I have a column where I can enter my desired gross profit. So let's say I'm at 58%, I need to be at 62. Just by plugging those numbers in, I can see exactly how many cars I need and how many dollars I need for my break-even. I'm a numbers guy, right? So if you don't know the numbers, you can't manage your business. You can't manage what you can't measure. How many times we heard that?
Yeah, back in my day, we were doing that formula on stores. And of course, you know, we called it key and door. You know, you had a break even that had to pay all the bills. And you'd say, you guys happy with that? Yeah, well, that doesn't make us any money. You could get there, but then, you know, let's throw the margin that we've got to have on top of that number. So be happy that you broke even, but be thrilled and elated that, hey, maybe you get a bonus. The place will allow, you know, more inventory growth, more salaries, because you've got to have that money. So great, great point. Break even is just not going to cut it today, but it's not a bad number to know.
And here's something too, that when I coach my guys, I tell them that when you're looking at your P&L and you look at all your expenses, that doesn't include your debt. So you have to put that number in there, because debt is on the balance sheet, not on the P&L. It's in the cash flow. It's not on the P&L. And we always add, for me, it's 10% over my cost is calculated into our break even.
Thanks for that. Next question, less labor rate adjustments.
We've gone up $30 an hour since August 1st this year.
It's a big jump.
Again, you know, parts are getting harder and harder and harder to get your margins on. And just for the nature of the work we do a lot of dealer parts. And we're not going to get 50 to 55% gross profit margin on dealer parts. It's just put you outside of the competitive network.
Frank, did you see a shake in the force? The force is the P&L statement, you know. Did you see something happening there, or are you anticipating, are you making the move of $30 because you anticipate change?
So we wanted to improve our bonus structure a little bit, and we wanted to improve our bottom line a lot. We got a new manager who came in April. Part of his pay is on net profit. So I want to make sure we're driving some dollars to the bottom line. And we're extremely busy. And I thought it was because we were too cheap, to be honest. So taking a run at it.
Great point. Thanks. Question 15, share a car count idea.
Stop going for more car count. Make every car count more. A lot of shops think they need more cars, when the cars they have, they're not capitalizing their resources on. Every car needs a thorough, proper written inspection, period. Every discovery needs to be estimated, period. 100% of the estimate needs to be presented, period. That's all there is to it. Just do it.
That's the 100-100-100 rule. Rick White, coach in the industry, says you got to slow down. You can't speed up. If you slow down, obviously, Frank, you can do everything you just said.
So many shop owners, when they get lower car count and they panic, then they do panic marketing. But when you get them to look at the numbers and say, okay, what was your average RO when car count went down? Well, it went up. Why? Okay, well, that's the point. When you're focusing on fewer cars, you can focus more on them, do more with them, and get better value for the motorist and better value for the shop.
Last website update?
Last month. So AutoVitals does our website, and they just did a complete revamp of the site, and we've got our own chat bot, so to speak, on there, where certain questions get automatically answered and a customer can go in there and chat a message, and we get notification on our screen that somebody's been asking a question. So it's pretty cool.
Very important today. Hey, the most recent update of your processes or systems, you're constantly tweaking that, I bet.
Every day. So, and the only way you can do that is by having communication with your team and regular meetings. So we have weekly meetings with the entire team. The advisors have daily 5-minute huddles with their advisor, with their techs in the morning. We meet with the manager once a week on Friday for an hour, you know, making sure we're all on the same page, still going in the same direction. Here's an example, you know, phone quotes. We all hate doing them, and we all end up doing them. That's the item of choice this week, because now with Shopware, I can see open estimates that haven't been converted to repair orders yet. That's a new feature that they have. So now I can see estimates that, you know, we created for cars that didn't come in. So here I have it right there in one immediate report. This is why phone quotes don't work, guys. We're just throwing out numbers. We're going blah, blah, blah. We're the best, blah, blah, blah. Come to us, blah. But we're wasting time. We need to get the car in no matter what we think the customer is going to do based on our price. And we're not the cheapest, so why should we be competing on price?
I'll bet you that the biggest sales growth opportunity in your business are the estimates that weren't sold.
It's tens of thousands.
Great point. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm sure you're paperless. How far long ago did you go paperless?
We've been paperless for at least 6 or 7 years. Even before we signed up with AutoVitals, we were paperless. And again, tweaking that process, right? So I got sick and tired of the technician writing in hieroglyphics, left rear window regulator bad. And for some reason, the service advisor would trigger in his brain and he would write right rear window regulator is bad and order the wrong part. So we went to where the technicians had access to our point of sale and they put their notes directly in there. And then we just had to make it human appropriate, you know, take out the acronyms, the abbreviations, and, you know, the tech talk.
Interesting. Let me throw something by you. Someone said if it's a $1,000 ticket, you need to have 1,000 words on the repair order to help justify that. Do you, it may be a little far-fetched, but do you agree that the work order needs to, you know, be comprehensive?
Yes. Comprehensive. I don't know if I'd go, you know, trying to get a certain number of words in, but we charge a lot of money for testing, right? And to justify that, the technician has to tell us what they tested, what those test results were, and what the recommendations were. Now, the customer is not going to know, here's the oscilloscope pattern that I took that shows me the timing is out. They don't know what that means, but by documenting it, it takes out any doubt, right? So if they get a bill for $300 for testing and says, okay, we tested your car, it needs cam bearings, whatever, right? Well, what did I get for $300? But if I document the procedures and I took this apart and I took this off and I had to remove this, I had to get clearance for this, I had to do this, and I have all these details, it helps justify what we're charging for.
Got it. You said to me a little bit ago that you raised your labor rate $30. Would you mind sharing what it is?
$164.19 for general repairs. Maintenance is a little bit lower, you know, some of our flushes and things to be competitive. But for the most part, it's 164. Older cars, you mentioned before we were higher, were 199 and a little bit. You know, we got, you know, change on the end of that for the older cars. Exotics are like 229.
Do you have a diag rate?
We do. It's like 187, I think. So we have a basic first coming in rate. Our basic scan, basic testing, basic, you know, are the wires connected? Are all the vacuum hoses okay? Let me see. Maybe this is something really common. And that's 179 initially. And then we go stage two, then it does go up from there. And I pay my techs more for level two diagnosis. And I pay them more for the older cars. I'm not just charging more. We do pay our guys more.
Cool. Thanks. Question 19. Name something you tried that didn't work.
Hybrid battery rebuilding.
Interesting. You actually tried to do that yourself?
Yep. It's a $65,000 train wreck. And I've just about, thanks, Carm, because now my wife's in here, and I just about got her to forget about it. Oh,
you're going to have a bad dinner with her tonight.
Oh. You know what? And if that's the worst mistake I make in my career, so what? You know? And it taught me something where Frank was always first to market, right? I'm going to be the first to be able to do everything. So I was the first independent shop that had all factory scanners in town. And I was the first independent shop that had an R134 machine. I was going to be the first that could do hybrid batteries. And the science works, and I believe in it. Mark Quarto is a brilliant guy. But the customers had a hard time understanding why you were doing it just to improve gas mileage, and they didn't buy in. And when you did get a battery that was finally so bad that it turned on a warning light, you would replace the cells you found, and then, you know, 6 months or 12 months later, two more would go bad. So it really didn't pencil out for us. And what it taught me was, like, when ADAS first came out and everybody was jumping, and you had a meeting on this, I believe. Yeah. And I looked at it and I says, okay, here's what I see. I got to hold my breath and wait. Don't be the first to jump in and watch what happens, because I think it's kind of like a interim technology right now. And I think there's going to be huge changes coming up, and we're going to be stuck with a bunch of equipment that we're not going to use except for a handful of years.
I've got an ADAS calibration center coming on to do a tour, a live shop tour, aftermarketweekly.com, probably within a month. Just everyone who's listening, just keep your ear to the grind on that. I'm on record recently to say this. You've got to get ADAS training. You may not need a calibration center. You need to be trained. You need to know and understand. I mean, how many times is it's mechanical? You can't get this thing working right. The customer goes back and says, you know, I still can't stay on the road, or my cruise doesn't work. And you could have had a bump and a collision in a parking lot, and, you know, the front radar sensors are off, or something is not right. Even the cloudy windows, you know, where the cameras are looking out. So that respect that ADAS deserves, that we need to be trained. Now, the whole marketing and expenditure and stuff like that, and some of the neat new equipment that's coming out, and the dynamic versus the static calibrations and all, it's a moving target. But you're right. Somebody is going to be an ADAS calibration center in your town someday, and they're going
they
to.
They are now. So why should I invest $25,000 in equipment when I can call this guy up and for $150 or $200, he can either do it here or take the car to his big warehouse with the white walls and a white floor and do it with his targets.
Very, very good point. Question 20. Here it is. What is your dream car and do you own it?
I don't currently, but I did twice. I wanted to build a hot rod Mercedes coupe. So I bought a 1988 or 89 six-cylinder coupe, 300 CE coupe. And I was so excited about it. I was telling my wife, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this. And she looked at me and said, I can't believe Mercedes doesn't make a high-performance two-door car. I said, they do. So I sold it, and I bought a CLK 63 AMG convertible. 505 horsepower that you just don't have any business driving is too much, but I enjoyed that car. And I've probably had hundreds of cars, and it's the only one I truly miss. Now, I've owned it twice because I sold it here in town, and it had an oil leak, and we told the gal I sold it to that the oil pressure sensor was leaking, and I'm going to take care of that. So here's the deal. She gives me some money. She brings the car in for a first oil change. And it turned out it was something else. It was on that particular engine. You had to pull the engine out and pull it apart to fix the oil leak. And I said, look, I told you what I was going to do. I didn't know this was wrong with the car. I said, here's what it's going to cost you to fix it. Sorry, or I'll buy the car back. So 3 days later, she said, Frank, I've been crying for 3 days. Can you buy the car back? I said, oh, boo-hoo. I've been crying for 2 weeks since you've had the car. So, and I did. I bought it back. And I don't know, a year later, I sold it again, and I should have, it was an AMG, so it was like stupid expensive to fix stuff on it. So what I should have done was bought a car cover and just left it in the garage when I was mad at it and waited until I wasn't mad anymore and drove it again, and I'd still have it. But so I will have another AMG Mercedes convertible someday. I will.
By the way, if you're listening audio, Frank just looked over at his wife with this stern Sicilian look.
Did you see the finger? Is it okay? May I? Can I?
Frank's famous finger. Oh, my God. I loved it. Thank you so much. This was great. Thank you for being so transparent and open with us. And, you know, as you always do, partake out some wisdom here for our industry. 20 questions, 30 minutes. Frank Scandura from Frank's European Las Vegas. Thanks, man.
It's always a pleasure, Carm. Thank you very much.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.